I'm here with folks from one of our valued and important educational entities, institutions, the Forest Bird Charter School. I'd like to introduce our guest, Mary Jensen, Executive Director.
Hi, Mary. Susie.
Hi, so nice to have you. And Mark Weber.
Yes, indeed.
IT Director.
Hello.
And Molly Bond, Culinary Arts Teacher.
Hello, and it's great to be here.
Yep, we'll have a really lively conversation about this wonderful school that we have that as a choice for parents in our community. And again, thanks for coming in to showcase Forest Bird Charter School and get the word out about some of the key upcoming dates and the school's unique approach to students and families. In your recent posting in the Sandpoint Reader, you had a great ad on the back page the other day, which really helped me outline this interview. It had your mission statement. I'm just going to read that because it says a lot. We create innovative learning opportunities by fostering community, individuality, and imagination. My favorite word. Yes. How does this mission meet students today? Why is imagination important? Well, any one of you. Holly? Molly? Molly?
I think that imagination is one of the most important things we can foster, because along with that imagination comes confidence, comes the ability to dream and follow those dreams. So I think that it's something that we embrace and we try to incorporate into every classroom in our school. I'm just lucky to be amongst that.
And Mark, how do you do that in the IT department? And what does IT stand for? I should know this.
It basically is the tech director would be basically the person who works with internet technology systems.
Okay, kind of what I thought. So you're the tech director. Mm-hmm. How does imagination come into the work with students in something that is so static?
Well, with imagination is that when things break, you got to fix it. And in the IT world and network systems, everything is changing all the time. As you know, like all of a sudden you log into your favorite social media site and they change the platform. And you have to adapt. And so we're always adapting and using our imagination to figure out, okay, how do we solve this problem? So the kids are really great at that. And then also just working on fixing things. And I actually have the kids work with me sometimes when we're fixing their problems.
So a lot of critical thinking goes in along with the imagination. It's kind of their partners.
Yeah.
And Mary, you've been around this school for a long time.
I've been there for a while. What I think imagination is the critical thinking outside the box. If we don't use our imagination, we're not going to pull forward and progress in our society. So if we're fostering imagination, we're fostering future things we can't even imagine our students or even us will to learn and work. I think about, Susie, that when I was a kid, there weren't even computers, and how fast technology has pushed us forward, medicine. And that's because of the imagination of the people working in different areas of our world is because how far we got.
Right. I remember the analogy of if you can't see a cube. So at the school I used to participate in, we'd have the students build a cube. And later on, when they're doing geometry and math, that helps them have a reference, you know, but a hands-on kind of thing in the early years. Okay, first let's talk with Mary. Why don't you briefly tell the listeners a bit about Forest Bird Charter School, its approach and pedagogical features?
Okay, I know I'm biased, but Forest Bird Charter School is an amazing school for students and for staff. One of the things that I think is really important for people to know is that we are a project-based learning school. And that does not mean kids are just doing projects. Project-based learning, they plan, they create the projects to deepen their learning from backgrounds that the teachers have given them. And then they bring it all the way through and they present, and then they analyze what they have done for improvements and what they did well. They do that with each other's projects too. So there's also a collaborative element to project-based learning. And the other thing that I think is really a cornerstone of our school is how much we look at the individual student. Every student is known by a teacher, at least one teacher, that they understand where they are academically and what's going on in their personal lives if the families choose to share with that. We work with each student individually instead of a big class of 35 and they all get the same information and off they go to take their test. We have class sizes below 22, usually around 10 to 15, so they can, our teachers and our staff can work individually with each kid and meet their individual needs. Mark, do you have more to add to that?
I would, because I think what you're saying is absolutely correct and pretty amazing. And we have Molly, a great 11th grade advisor here. And the advisory classes are amazing for making that connection with the kids and with the parents. They're like the main point of contact for the home. And I did advisory for years and I loved it. And changing up advisory and doing it by class, I think is a brilliant idea. And the juniors can work together. And I've seen line dancing at the stage with the sophomore classes working together. So just that sense of community and creativity. So Molly, you might have something to add to that.
So I'm really lucky because not only am I an educator at the school, but I'm also a parent of an 11th grader. And it was the most incredible thing how we found Forest Bird Charter School. I don't know if anybody else out there has an incredibly brilliant child who is struggling in school. And you feel like as a parent, you've tried to bribe them into doing their homework and punish them into doing their homework. And you've tried everything under the sun and you're just trying to force this round peg into a square hole and it's just not working. That's where we were at with our daughter. And we found Forest Bird Charter School. And you walk in the door and you can feel that the environment is different. It's more creative. It's more innovative. It's more engaging. And the kids are happy. You feel it the moment you walk in. So our daughter just blended into Forest Bird Charter School so beautifully. It was like hitting lottery. And then I had the incredible opportunity behind that to even teach at the school, which has been a remarkable experience that's changed me as a human. And I think it's made an impact on our kids too.
Well, earlier, Mary, you talked about the impact of this project-based learning, and it's more than that. You said it's for the students and the teachers. And we could speak to why is a teacher who's fully engaged and seeing students thrive make a good educator?
I'm sorry, can you repeat the question? Because I got lost.
Okay.
Yeah.
We're talking about project-based learning, and it supports the students in so many different ways. But you also mentioned the staff.
Yes.
So how does that work? What do they gain from it? And how does that then turn over into the art of teaching?
Well, you know what? I'm going to pass that on to Mark and Molly because they were both teachers. And I have not been a teacher for a little while. So I think their souls are the better ones to answer.
So I used to teach economics and American government for years before I became the IT director. And what I found in the project-based learning for my classes is that I'm learning with them. And so I would also create really creative classes that kids would like to take, like the history of psychology. And then we would actually look at some of the experiments that were done in the past, and we'd have kids create their own ideas and start to see how psychology affects them, affects the world that they're in. And that they actually can identify, oh my goodness, this advertisement is using psychology against me to sell me a product. So kids were able to find the propaganda and everything that was involved in that. And so I'm learning from them. They're learning from me. And it becomes more of the project-based learning is a team effort between teacher and student. And it's just exciting to see their lights go on, but also to be inspired by them to go further as a teacher.
I think inspired is the word, because day in and day out, bringing curriculum to students who are not enthusiastic, who aren't engaged, you can lose that inspiration a little bit. And so as you create your curriculum or your lesson for the day, it's probably a little bit of fun.
Oh, it's a lot of fun. So yeah. I know Molly has been doing some really amazing stuff with just the holidays in the school. And so yeah. I'll let you talk about that. It's pretty cool.
Well, we try to embrace the holidays, not just for the fun of it, but also cultural appreciation. we have to realize that one way that we can travel and appreciate other cultures is not by necessarily opening a textbook, but sometimes it starts with what you see, what you smell, and what touches your tongue. And you get exposed to something new that maybe you didn't even know you liked. So in culinary arts, it's really important to me that I produce a student that can go out into the community and be a productive person in a restaurant. They all graduate with a food handler's permit and understand skill and technique. They know enough about these rules that then they have confidence and they can be creative and add something to the workplace as well as their future.
Why don't you give us an example? I'm thinking of Kwanzaa. I'm not even sure how that fits in, but what would be some of the world-class celebrations that you might bring in new experiences with food?
Well, Kwanzaa is just one of them because we have to take into account the herbs, spices, and traditions of Africa, which have found their way into the culinary arts industry here in the United States because we're such a melting pot. But right now, we're currently embracing Chinese New Year, also known as Lunar New Year and Spring Festival. It's celebrated by 2 billion people in the world. So it would be really silly if we didn't embrace something that's so huge. So we're experimenting and playing around with all the tastes and flavors of Asia and India. And it's been remarkable for not just me, but also our students.
So you cook the food and you experience the variety. But why don't you describe one dish from the Chinese New Year?
Lunar New Year. I don't know if I can narrow it down to one, but the kids have had so much fun with sushi making and hot pot, egg flour soup, fried rice, everything good.
Mm-hmm. Sounds fun.
And yummy.
It's making me really hungry.
It's delicious. I skipped my lunch for it.
So you feed the other people in the school too.
Yeah, because food is the ultimate root of creating community.
Molly, I think you should tell them about what you've developed with the food program and giving food out.
Well, I think most great things happen partially by accident and partially by realizing a need. And all of our community here, we realize that not all of our students are living in homes that are above the poverty level. So, just through seeing kids who needed a snack throughout the day, our program kind of blossomed into a bit of a soup kitchen. And there's nothing more gratifying than being able to provide a free lunch for our students and seeing 100 kids line up and all share the same meal is truly remarkable. And it's something that sometimes they weren't getting at home. Mm-hmm. So we have the gift of donations that go into our program so that we can then shop whatever sales there are and we come up with something beautiful. And we try to feed the kids a free meal 3 days a week.
Wow, that's impressive.
We try.
Yeah. So I'm just going down the list. Thank you for that. We're building a picture of the unique aspects of Forest Bird Charter School. One of the things on the ad in the reader was building relationships. And I think you've touched on it quite a bit, but with families, the student, the teacher, and a bigger community of the school. Anyone want to jump in on that one?
Well, the education, of course, is academics, but we can't really have academic growth if we don't understand what is going on with the students or the no communication with the family. That's a disaster. So we really focus on knowing the student and the families and what their needs are. And so that way we can delve deeper in what their gaps are or what their emotional needs are for even the day. For example, we have Advo first thing in the morning where we do check-ins, and there might be a student that comes in and we find out that their dog died, horrible situation that night, and they are not emotionally able to learn in the morning. And so our teachers will share, hey, little Susie is having a difficult morning, and that to be gentle with them. It doesn't necessarily mean sharing what's happened, but it's just an awareness that they need a little extra space or grace for the day. And go on.
So how do you facilitate that inner information. Sharing that information.
Usually it goes out as an email.
Okay, that's fair.
Yeah.
And from the parents, too. I mean, do they have access to letting the student's first class teacher mm-hmm. or their advisor know if something's up?
Often.
And encouraged to share that.
Often the parent will call the Advo teacher or send a message or give a message to the office. Mark, I see you have something burning.
Because I was also a parent of a student that graduated from Forestburg Charter School. And what I found was the communication line was Canvas a lot for the parents. And so the parents can actually see what's going on in each class with each teacher. And they can also mm-hmm. instant message in Canvas using their cell phone and the cell phone app mm-hmm. and just say, hey, this is happening today to the teacher. The teacher pulls that information up from the email system and then fires that off to the relevant teachers for that student. And I use that support system for my own son. But I just love that fact that I can access the teacher anytime I need to. And I give them grace to get back to me, but it's really kind of cool to work together with the school, and that Canvas portal allows teachers and parents to communicate. And so there really is no reason that a student misses any assignments because mm-hmm. we're right there on top of it.
Mm-hmm. And one thing that makes our school so beautiful is the fact that we're not huge. We are smaller. Again, we have those smaller class sizes. So we're able to embrace the different communication styles of the parents as well as the children, because I know, like myself, I'm a texter. I love to get a text. I love to send a text. We're really open to just communication in general. It's what we thrive on because it helps us do our job better and serve the needs of our students better.
And to build those relationships with families, we want to have their input, and we want to work with them, not to have automatic discipline consequences, for example. So we have programs like academic advisement. If they're not doing well in school, we call the parent in with the students, and we have a discussion with them what could help the student, and everybody has input on that. That doesn't mean there aren't consequences to particular things, but we're working all together to find solutions.
That sounds excellent for the health and welfare of the students, the families, and the teachers, because you're all working together. I'm wondering about what it looks like. I thought it would be fun to just say, what does it look like when the student comes to school in the morning? Where do they go? Just kind of a brief day in the life of a student at Forestburg. And before we get to that, how many students?
Right now we're sitting at around 245 students. We are looking for our application process, and lottery is happening right now for next year. So if anybody's interested in joining us, then we could go to the website or call us and get an application in.
Right. So we'll mention that again at the end. So stay with us through this interview. So backing up to...
Oh, yes.
And so you have 240 students in how many grades? Just a picture of
the school. We're 6 through 12.
6 through 12. Mm-hmm. Okay. So a sixth grader comes in. They're brand new. They came from an elementary school and or a private school or homeschooled. Mm-hmm. And what does their first day look like? Yes, Mr. Weber.
So I get to see this when I run over to troubleshoot things in the morning. But at 7:35, the doors open. And the kids that are in the middle school section go into the cafeteria area, and they're under supervision with the teachers. And so the teachers are there relating to the students, talking to students. A lot of students come up and talk to their teachers, and it's a very friendly environment. And then after that, they get dismissed to go to advisory. And then in advisory, the teachers usually on Monday kind of do a drill down and say, how's your weekend? How's everybody doing? And get kind of a pulse, like what Mary was saying earlier about the students and where they're at emotionally, physically, and just, you know, health-wise. And then they go to their first period, and if the advisory teacher flags something that's like, hey, we need to be aware of this, it goes out to the administration, it goes out to the staff, and then the kids usually have a day in which the staff are just kind of aware to make sure to watch and make sure, like, if, you know, the dog death situation, mm-hmm. which really did happen, mm-hmm. was just that the kid's okay, and that if he's, you know, sobbing in the corner, to understand, give a little bit of grace to it, and also find a place or be helpful to that student. And so it's kind of pretty much the day until they get to lunch. And then lunch is they go to the cafeteria under supervision again, very much a social community event. High school is a little bit different in that situation as they get to leave campus. But many of them choose to stay and be with their friends. And of course, with Molly having the most amazing food in the world, the lineup is incredibly huge. And I was going in to get food the other day and I went, you know, I'm just going to let the kids have this one because it was such a long line. And you just want to make sure everybody gets a little bit. So it's just, she's just very popular. And the kids that make the food with her are just amazing. So, and then third period, back to work, working and doing their PBLs, to work in their class. Fourth period.
PBLs?
Project-based learning. Okay. Some of the classes actually have like, you know, they do their assignments daily, but they might have an overall like project that they're doing in that class that expands the whole semester or even part of the semester. And so they kind of work on those in groups or even individually. And it's pretty cool. Even like the senior class, which my son was a part of last year, Bigley works with the senior projects and the kids get to explore something that they can see in the real world and prepare them for their launch into the real world. And so it's just really a great class to have.
Project-based learning.
Mm-hmm.
And it changes through this year, the semester, or is this something the student takes on at the beginning and follows through?
It depends on the class mm-hmm. and how they're approaching the project base and the age level of the mm-hmm. student. But our capstone is our senior project, which starts at the beginning of the semester and goes all the way to the end of the semester. And it is much different than other schools I've heard how they do it. So the students get to choose the project, they research, it's something that's near and dear in the heart that they want to do. And it is an intensive mm-hmm. end of their high school career with us is to do the senior project. Yeah.
And like some of the projects would be Invention Convention with Sarah Evans mm-hmm. course.
Invention
and also
Convention.
Invention Convention. And they compete regionally, and I think they can even go to the state if they mm-hmm. win. We had a couple kids make it to the paper this year. Mm-hmm. And then we have also NYLA Notables, which is under the social studies department in the middle school. And that's where they research a famous person, and then they become that famous person for the evening, and the parents are invited, and they interact with the kids and start to know who's who in this Night of the Notables. So that's a really good thing in the projects there too. So, and then also we have Ren Fair coming up, a brand new
Ren
thing.
Fair.
First annual.
First
Ren
one
Fair.
Ever. It's going to be awesome. So I'm going to let Molly take that one.
So a couple times a year, we try to provide our culinary arts students with the possibility of creating their own food truck or food booth, where this is all project-based learning, but it's completely individualized to that student. So they get to really follow their interests, their passions, and then bring in that entrepreneurial side where they can sell their food product within the school and they get to keep the profit. I've never heard of anything so cool in any other public school where you can actually make money. And I've had students who are just like virtually on the going to do a cartwheel because they made over $100 in 1 hour. And it's really cool. It lights that spark. It gets them interested and they're having fun. They don't even realize they're learning half the time. That's magic.
So Molly, go back to Ren Fair.
Oh.
So I want to say Ren Fair is a collaborative effort amongst many different classes for this project.
Yes, indeed. So it's a Renaissance fair. We get to incorporate English into this. We get to incorporate in history. And of course, we have to bring it with the culinary arts. Part of one of the classes that's tying into our Renaissance Fair is our European Ethnic Foods Through the Ages class, where currently we are in the Iron Age. Currently, our class is not only cooking over real fire outside. Sorry, Mary.
They're carving
their own wooden spoons because we're entering into soup, and soup with fingers is no fun. And then we'll head into the Renaissance era right about the time that our Renaissance fair hits. And there will be games. There will be interactive booths available. Of course, great, yummy food. And we hope that this first year will spark next year's Renaissance fair. So like I say, first annual.
Ren Fair. Mm-hmm. So a question, you have all these ideas, you have really great project-based learning ideas mm-hmm. that some are time-tested and some are new. Where do you come up with, obviously this Ren Fair probably is happening in other charter schools. Is there a network of ideas floating around that you touch into, grab from, or is this really the Forest Bird Charter School's creative endeavor?
It depends on the project, to tell you the truth, but what we do is we look at our current student population and what interests them, and those interests could drive what kind of projects that we develop throughout the year. So the Renaissance Fair, we have a great number of staff and students who are interested in that time period and medieval as well, portions of our world. So we tailored this Ren Fair around our interests of the students. Right now we have a lot of students who are interested in aviation. And so our new science teacher, Kevin Kless, is really amping up the idea of aviation in the school and developing projects, and got some great grants for us to bring in some equipment on that. Mark, you did a lot of really neat projects.
Well, even as the IT director, I'm still keeping my fingers into this. And so I left the economics class and my economics craft fair behind. And it's kind of cool to see that the basically culinary arts and other people are taking it to that, like selling products and making money, because that was all about making profit for the kids. It was awesome.
Commerce.
Yes, mm-hmm. Commerce, right? And understanding how money is made. But I've been doing the radio club and keeping the radio club going. And we have several students that are interested in that. I have a seventh grader that just got their technician license. I have an eighth grader that got both the technician and the general class license. Molly's daughter, Ella, is now a general class licensed individual for amateur radio. And she's also the president of the club. And the club is meeting tomorrow. And we're going to develop a plan to help kind of create like mini lessons and then take it to the road and start visiting the elementary schools in the area and teach them about amateur radio, what it does, and also the competition that you can enter. And we entered into the AARRL, which is the Amateur Radio Relay League, which is a over 100-year-old lobby group that has been protecting the amateur radio bands for people for, well, plus 100 years. But we've been competing with other schools across the United States and Canada, and it's been just amazing to see the kids do that. It's a week long. We just did it February 9th to the 13th. The kids came in on a holiday just to do it. So I came in, Molly came in on that holiday and cooked us a wonderful meal. And the kids, you know, would jump from, if they're not doing the radio, they would help cook or help decorate. And Molly did an amazing job decorating for the Chinese New Year that day as well. But I think we took second this year. And
congratulations.
I know, as a we've only done it 4 years, and we're competing against clubs that are 100 years old.
Wow.
And it's really kind of cool to be the new kid on the block. And everybody looks and goes, there's our call sign, W7FPS. And we're looking at Arizona State's. We're looking at Kansas University. Mm-hmm. So all these colleges are looking at these kids. And it's really kind of cool to have them recognize our school. So if they do apply to these colleges, that they would be looked at as like, oh, you're from W7FPS. Yes, you're from Forest Bird. Mm-hmm. So it's more connections. I just sent an email home to several of the students and their parents just yesterday, saying that we have a list of scholarships that these kids could have for free and be a part of. And so I'm getting them prepped to where they can start applying for this money so they can actually ease or burn in college. And they don't even have to go into the field of radio. It's just about keeping the hobby alive. So it's really cool.
And it's the experience of making a commitment and following through. Mm-hmm. I know you've been talking with Jack Peterson, the KRFY production manager, about maybe giving them some real on-air experience, mm-hmm. and that's always a possibility. We have the Sandpoint High School has a show called something at 3 o'clock. I should know this. I started it. But the kids get a lot out of participating. And mm-hmm. the one word that I keep coming up with in my thinking when I hear about what you're doing, Molly and Mark and the administration, is you're forming a community that supports these children. And our children these days in this just in this modern world, we'll say, need as much community behind them. It, you know, the parents can only go so far, but when the whole school has an idea of who this child is and sees them for who they are, maybe as much as they can. So it leads me to think that when a student comes in, there must be a lot of interaction to get to know that student. And how does that work? I mean, is there a survey they take and then you meet with them and there's an application process that's more than just a piece of paper?
So the application process is just a piece of paper. So the first, we are still liking the paper portion of our world sometimes. Oh, yeah. What the first interaction that a typical student has is with our academic advisor, Ben Evans, who is amazing at his job. And he gets a good feel with the student and the parent beyond academics. And he sets them up for tours and shows them in the school and introduce them to teachers that may connect with them right away to help them feel comfortable coming in.
I imagine there's also an orientation once they're coming in before school starts.
Oh, yeah. We call it back-to-school bash because we like the alliteration of it. But back-to-school bash happens about a week before school starts, and that's when the students meet their ADVO teachers, and those ADVO teachers are their advocates for the year. So the students and families get to meet their main person.
Connector.
Yeah. Now, later on, that main connector might be a different teacher, but the ADVO teacher is the person they meet to begin with.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. ADVO teachers, and I am one, we're their morning touch base person. Okay. We mm-hmm. kind of have a pulse for how that student is doing today, who they are as a human, which really helps us teach them in a way that works for them. And it's done through a lot of collaboration between all of the teachers. And we always say that, or Mary, she's so great, because she always reiterates that we're a teacher-led school. But ultimately, because all of us as teachers see our students as individuals and we really want to light that spark within them, we, to a great extent, become a student-led school because mm-hmm. we want to see an education that they not only enjoy but works for them.
I think you just said the magic word. You see the students as individuals.
It's the most important thing we do.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I can see that. I just want to let the listeners here at 88.5 Carafoy know that I'm speaking with folks from the Forest Bird Charter School, Mary Jensen, Executive Director, Mark Weber, Tech Director, and Molly Bond, Culinary Arts Teacher. And we're really showcasing this amazing educational opportunity and institution here in our community. I think we're very fortunate to have something as another option. And Mary, when all of this stuff comes to mind is there are some credentials and what I call standards that have to be met by state mm-hmm. authorities. And tell us how a charter school works outside of a regular public school. It is a public entity.
It is. It's a public entity. And we have to follow the same rules as a traditional public school. We still have to do the ISAT test. We still have to meet all the standards. We actually have to report our results more, I feel, to not only the state, but our authorizer. And our authorizer is Lake Pendere School District, who I am so appreciative of. Their board, the superintendent, everybody there are just, they're wonderful people and they see such value in school choice and what we do. So thank you, LPOSD.
And they know that each child, you know, flourishes in different environments.
Yes.
So that's a plus.
That is a plus. Yeah. The difference of a charter school in Idaho, every state's different. In Idaho, the charter schools need to pick an educational philosophy, and that is what they stick to. They don't get to deviate from that. So some have a college-based learning philosophy, and like for us, it's project-based learning. So that is where our mission and our philosophy stands as a charter.
And you've stuck with that since its inception, or did this get developed early on, beforehand, or as you went along?
No, when you do a charter in Idaho, the charter specifically says what your educational philosophy is. So it's been like that for us since we got our charter in 2001. Wow. So we've been around. We're one of the older, I hate to say that because I'm getting of a certain age, but we're one of the oldest charters in the state of Idaho.
Well, so, congratulations, yeah. Because it has been very successful.
I think so, yes.
So who administers, I'm thinking it's you, Mary, to make sure that all the ducks are in a row for the standards and requirements and policies and procedures, so to speak, to integrate into the state system and working with Lake Ponderay School District and Dr. Becky Meyer and things like that. That's what you hold on to?
That is what my job is to make sure that we're following those policies and those laws and everything's, you know, on the up and up. But I have to say the teachers, they know the standards. They are the experts on the standards. And so they make those decisions in the classroom. And I trust all of them to do that. I like every other administrator, double check on that. But they're amazing. One of the great things, Molly said we're a teacher-led school. One of the great things is that we don't have textbooks. And so our teachers know what the standards are, and they find current information, current research to pull in to their classrooms to teach. Because let's face it, textbooks, by the time a teacher gets it, a lot of them are outdated. And so we want to keep up with the current information and the current times. That allows our kids to also think and critically and know what's going on in our world right now.
Critical, independent thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And so how do you do that in a technological world, Mark? Is that what you were raising your finger for?
Well, I came from a school where we had to use textbooks, and we would go to a convention and look at all the different publishers, and every one of the textbooks are written for New York, Texas, and California, and they have no care whatsoever about the smaller states. They're looking for getting the most bang for their buck. And so being a teacher in Idaho, technology-wise, is that you can use the History Center, like Bonner County or County History Museum, and get a kit from them. They are amazing. I actually was teaching a history class, History of Telecommunications, where I wrapped some of the amateur radio in. They provided a letter to me that had a stamp on it that was, I think, worth 2 cents at the time. I think it's worth $20,000 now if they hadn't stamped it. But still, just that they have real artifacts. They're willing to scan those for us and submit it to the classroom. So there's so much wealth here. It's so beyond textbook at this point.
And beyond just computers.
Just beyond. I mean, there are so many people in the community you can access and you can talk to.
Oh, you could bring in an expert in economics.
Exactly. And so, I mean, we have, judges that come in for mock trials for Todd's class. You have, you bring in people for culinary arts. I mean, we have so many people that just kind of, you just start grabbing people and bring them in. And they just come in and they teach us so much. And the kids and us learn with that community member. And then the community member goes, this is great. This is education the way it should be.
Let's work from that point of view.
As much as we want students knocking down our door, it's really a perfect environment to be a teacher because we have enough freedom within those standards that we can create a curriculum that's truly engaging for the students. It's a remarkable experience for not just us, but also them. And it keeps it really alive. And I love that.
I get that. I wanted to switch gears just a little bit. How fantastic. I'm so glad I'm hearing what I'm hearing is this hands-on helping the student to decipher by seeing and doing. And that's what forms critical thinking skills. And, so there you go. But Mark and everyone, actually, we know that the internet is not necessarily a good, safe place for anyone, really. Some people. But for children in particular, and I see in your very nice outline that you gave me, Mark, the internet filter. You have the tech director's special items, Forestburg Charter School's internet filter to protect students from inappropriate content online. And that leads into another, parent portal-free home access to that filter. Mm-hmm. And in this, yeah, you have a lot of examples. Do you want to talk about that? Because I know that that's top on the list for a mm-hmm. lot of parents, and that might be another reason why parents might send their children to a school that is keenly aware mm-hmm. of that.
It's top on the list for parents. It's top on the list for our state legislatures. It's top on the parents for on the list for the teachers and the administration. I mean, this is a huge button that is being pushed by Idaho right now, trying to figure out how to keep kids safe online. It's just not the way it used to be. Gone are the day of your set up your geosites, you know, website about your favorite cats. You know, now there's just so much stuff that is so dangerous online, and with AI being incorporated to include that onto more stuff that can hurt kids, pedophilia, and you know that preying on people on kids is a real thing. And so what we're doing with the filter is the filter is basically it's monitoring the traffic of the student, and we are blocking sites that would be considered inappropriate. Right, so social media sites that they can go off on and get
from the school's
school's filter, right? And so, like for example, one of the big ones was Roblox, I think it was, and it's a kind of like a Minecraft mimic site, but the people that created it have no care whatsoever to monitor it. It's all about getting kids in there and money, and that's a great place for predators to go, and has been. And so, there's been lawsuits that have come up because Roblox has refused to monitor its own site. And so we blocked that site completely at our school. Kids can't access it whatsoever at school and at home on the student devices. Mm-hmm. So we give every student a computer. It has the filter on it. And so the parent can, you know, especially if you're in the middle school and you have a sixth grader and you don't know what to do with this new technology that's being pushed on your kid, is that they can be kind of like almost comfortable in saying, okay, they can use the student computer at home. They gave me parent portal. I can go in and see what my kid is accessing online. I can even shut off the internet if they're just being on the internet way too long, just watching things. And then they can also censor YouTube, and I also censor YouTube to take out, you know, like Grand Theft Auto, you know, like people, gamer sites will put in like, you know, graphic things that they've done in these mature games. Those have been filtered as well. So it's all about getting that out of there. And I know some students are just kind of like free birds. They can go anywhere they want on the internet, but I really would caution the parents to really watch garbage in, garbage out. It changes people, what's going on there.
Absolutely. Molly?
I feel like our school does an excellent job in not turning our backs on modern technology. We want to make sure that everything we do is current, but we also want to give kids a guardrail to keep them healthy, safe, and develop a good foundation on how to use the internet and how to decipher what's healthy and what's not. And I think that we stress that as teachers a lot because it just helps build that foundation for adulthood too.
Sounds like an interaction between parents, teachers, administration, and somewhat the students. They know that there's these filters. And I'm thinking more and more schools are doing this. I know the Lake Pend'Oreille School District has an evening, I think it's their third or fourth year coming up, and I forget what it's called. I'm going to be talking with Dr. Meyer pretty soon, but it's like safety in school for students. Student Safety Summit, maybe that's the name of it. And it's for parents. And they even have free childcare and a dinner to encourage many people to come to it. And I would imagine Forest Bird parents could even go to it too to get more information. So mm-hmm. Model with the filters and stuff, is that common throughout Idaho? Is it something you gained or did you create it?
So it's something that is offered to all schools, and then okay. schools or the tech director will determine what level of filter it will be. And the fact that we have this filter right now is because Google Chrome crashed our filter that we had. Oh, wow. And so when they crashed it and destroyed it, we actually went to a cloud-based system, and then I had to design it and work with that system. I really like the system. I'm getting it pretty much dialed for the kids to help it, but I also like the idea that when kids want something open or even a teacher wants it open, they can ask me, and I just say, hey, no problem, let's get this on the custom allow list and open it up.
For your research.
That's right.
For your understanding.
That's right. We're not in a world of where we're just locking kids down and saying you can only go on one path. The path can be opened up and made wider.
It's like going to a library.
Right.
And checking out a book.
I know. And I can even allow one kid to go into an area that maybe I even broken up with more of the mature, like you have the juniors and seniors. I have college students that are going to University of Idaho and they need access to Spotify. And Spotify has got some issues, a lot like Roblox, where they're not censoring their stuff because they're all they care about is profits and money and iClicks. But the college professor needed it. I was able to take those two college students, separate them out, put them in their own filter, and then allow Spotify through safely to them. So it's really, I am there kind of adjusting at the levers and moving where the students and this faculty need it. The other cool thing is that the faculty can filter their own class. They have the ability to use this thing called Lightspeed Classroom. They can see every screen of the students in their classroom, and they can actually send messages to the kids saying, hey, I see you're stuck here. Would you like some help?
Yeah.
And then that way they don't embarrass the kid. They just walk over and say, hey, and they start the conversation. They can also send website links. So it's like, okay, kids, we want to get on the same page for the Shakespeare play. Let me fire this link off. Here we are. We're on act one, scene three. Boom. There you go. And so it's like the teachers are now interacting through the system with their kids.
You have a full-time job.
Yes.
That's a big job. So just in the little bit of time, we'll do a review and we'll talk about open enrollment. That's very important and all the important numbers to call. But AI is something that you mentioned in your outline, but it's keenly on everyone's mind. What does it take away from the thinking brain, first of all, and how are you looking at the future with that?
Well, we were looking at including Copilot in with the kids, but then Copilot is not allowed to be used for anyone under 18, and they know it. They know it's not safe for kids. And so what we're doing is we're now having actively no AI used at the kids, but the teachers are allowed to use AI to develop curriculum and so forth. What I don't want to become a gatekeeper for AI, so I'm looking at, I think another one that North Idaho is looking at is Magic School, which has an AI built into a whole system there. I'm looking at other AI curriculum, but the one thing I'm concerned about with AI curriculum is that the AI companion in some of these software programs want to too much be a friend to the kid instead of being a tutor. And so it's trying to develop a relationship with the kid, and it's really not healthy to have a sixth grader think that this AI is their buddy when they have friends in the class that really are their friends.
Right, and it can pull them away from human contact, mm-hmm. is what I'm hearing you say. So you're keenly aware of it and on top of it.
Yeah, and we are working towards, you know, like, okay, where is this going to develop? How do we want to get them? Because we don't want to completely shut them off, but we want to make sure that it is a safe tool to use for the kids.
Okay. Well, let's do a little wrap up. This has been interesting. We're so fortunate, like I said several times, to have the Forest Bird Charter School as part of our educational family here in our community, our beautiful community. So does anyone want to say, well, Mary, before we get to that, let's talk about open enrollment and the importance and how parents who of what age students, any age students, whatever, you lay it out.
So we are taking applications for grades 6 through 12 for next school year right now. And we have this open enrollment until the middle of April. And during that time, anybody can apply. It's if there's an opening in the school for that grade level, then they'll be able to get in and have their spots.
For next year.
Now, if we have more applications than seats, then we go into a lottery. And it's not a first come, first serve at this time. It's whoever is drawn for the lottery to be able to get in. And then there's a wait list. After open enrollment, if there's still seats available, then it's first come, first serve after that.
Okay. So how do you get to the website? What is the website? And if they have questions, contact information.
Yes. So our website is forestbirdcharterschool.org. It is so long. So I'm going to say it one more time.
Forest with two R's.
Yes. Forest as in the name, not a tree thing. Forestbirdcharterschool.org. charterschool.org. You can also apply on our website. There's a button for application. If you would like a tour or more information about the school, you can call the school at 208-265-9737 and talk to one of our wonderful office people, and they will help you out on that as well.
Sounds good. Molly.
I would highly urge any parent who finds that their kid is brilliant but hasn't found their spot in the world, perhaps they're a non-traditional learner, please come visit us. We are looking to embrace your student and help them find their thing, their spark. And then once they find it, we want them to do it prolifically.
Perfect. And Mark?
And as a former parent of a child that came to Forestburg Charter School, I cannot tell you how wonderful Mary and Ben Evans were in helping my student get the credits they needed to graduate on time. And so he was able to do all the work. And with Canvas, I was able to make sure he got the work done. But it is a way to where the community wraps around your kid and they will help your kid be successful. And so it's just a really cool thing that not only you can have the creative kids, but you also have the kids that just didn't find their niche. And my son found his niche in the tech stuff. And that was part of the reason I became tech director was because of him.
And I want to put a extra little plug in that we have an option for our students to have an associate's degree. Mm-hmm. Actually, before they graduate from high school, they finish their college classes and then they have graduation from high school. And so that program we work with also with the state on advanced opportunities. So we have students having their associate's degree and not having to pay much out of pocket. And then they start as juniors if they decide to continue on in university. Or I'm going to give you, we've been talking about our wonderful, wonderful kids. My son was able to get the credits for academics, and he went into the welding program at NIC and graduated there, but he didn't have to take the English and math at NIC. He just focused on the welding classes because he was able to do that in the high school.
Well, thank you, everyone, for coming in and telling us about, again, this wonderful Forestburg Charter School. It sounds to me that it's a place of engagement by all concerned for the benefit of our community and our students. So good job with what you're doing over there. And again, thanks for coming in.
Thank you, Susie.